All right, what's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Grind Podcast, where I talk hunting, entrepreneurship, and the daily grind of what it takes to earn success. I'm your host, Eric Van Workum. But before we get started here, this podcast is presented by Mountain Tough Fitness. Get 6 weeks free, get mountain ready, use code MuleyFreak. There's a direct link here on Spotify or iTunes, wherever you're listening. And I'm telling you, Mountain Tough has changed the way I work out. I've been running a 5K before I get into my workout. And there's a lot of programs in there. There's stuff for beginners. There's stuff that shows you the movements, the workouts. The stuff that I've been hammering on is the gym daily stuff. So I'll hit my 5K, run a half hour workout through the gym daily. It's a live, it's a coached workout. So it tells you how to do all the movements. You have an athlete to kind of compete with or kind of measure up against. And it's what I'm kind of doing for spring bear season. So check out Mountain Tough Fitness. Start working out. Don't be intimidated. If you have any personal questions, feel free to reach out to us and we'd be happy to help you out. But use that code MuleyFreak to get you 6 weeks free. Now, speaking of bears and spring bear, I have a special guest today here from the Division of Wildlife, Dustin Mitchell, the wildlife manager for the Southeast region. Thanks for joining us today, brother. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Doing good, man. Obviously, you know, spring bear is our jam and it understands like you have a special affinity for spring bear also.
Yes. Yep. Bears are one of my favorite animals to work with and also to hunt also. So yeah, I totally get it.
So what makes you like them so much? I mean, what do you like about them?
Oh man, there's so much about them. I mean, they're secretive animal. And so you don't see them a lot compared to, you know, your deer and elk, different ungulate species like that. So they're very secretive, but they've got some behaviors that are just unique to them. So they're pretty cool.
Yeah. So how long you've been at the division, how long you've been kind of specializing in bears, bear research. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I've been with the division for 12 years now. Been the biologist down on the San Juan and LaSalle units. So pretty big bear units for our state, for the last 10 years. So had a lot of experience in different situations with bears, I should say. Some of the research we've done, it's been pretty fun. You know, bear denning, you always hear about that. That's one of our big projects that we do. We get a lot of great information from those efforts that we do. We look at things like production pulses or mm-hmm. reproduction rates for that year. We go in and look and see what they had for cubs that year.
Gotcha. I'm going to ask you about the bear denning studies, but first I want to get into high level, like some of those secret behaviors. What do you mean by secret behaviors?
Yeah. So, well, and it kind of goes in with denning. So we'll get around to that. But they have something that's called delayed implantation. Mm-hmm. And so a sow bear, she'll breed in usually, you know, June or July. And then she'll go throughout those summer months trying to put on as much fat as she can to sustain her throughout the winter when she's hibernating. So even though she's bred early in June, she'll go all summer without the egg actually implanting onto the uterine wall. Yeah. And if conditions aren't right that summer, if the food sources aren't there to sustain herself to get enough fat on her, then the embryo won't develop and she won't give birth that year. So she really? Can go all those months. And then coming into November, when she'd go into her den, that's when she decides if she's going to have that cub or not.
That's wild. So the body, the way they're engineered, the body kind of dictates whether it had enough nutrients and able to, what should I say, yeah. sustain another life while she dens.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
So that's kind of crazy and cool for them. But
yeah. What are the rates? Like what's the success rate on whether they give birth or not? Do you know?
It's funny. It depends on the year. Like 2018, when we had a really bad drought down here, we didn't have a lot of cubs that year at all. It might've not been any that year in all of our collared.
You're kidding. Collared any. So, how many do you have collared?
Currently, we try to keep six on these units right here. Okay. Three on each mountain range. Within our region, I mean, we've had up to probably 15 at a time.
Okay. So you found that none gave birth that year due to that drought.
Yeah, for the ones that we had collared, yeah.
How do these bears do in heavy and late winters? Say like the winter of last year, for example. Not this past season, but the one before.
Yeah, when we had the bigger snows.
Yes.
Yeah. And I've heard some of this, and maybe that's what you're getting at. I've heard some people say that we had big winter kill in yeah. the dens that year.
Yeah. How much of that's truth? Can a bear winter kill?
You know, I've never heard of it. And from our collar data that we've had those years. We didn't see any evidence of that. Mm-hmm. And I would say that that's the whole point behind bear denning, is so that they can get out of whatever winter deterrents are there, you know, because the food sources aren't there. And so That's the whole purpose to hibernating through those months. So it's not, I mean, that was an evolutionary trait that they gained to get through those months. So it's not like they would die normally from a big winter.
Right. Yeah. You know, that's kind of what I thought. Isn't that the purpose, that they hibernate? But, you know, we've had tags down on the manti, that late, or I guess that summer hunt, the baited hunt. And we've had it. One of us has had it. When I say one of us, Aaron or I or a friend or a cousin have had it. And one of our cousins, he's a federal biologist and works with private landowners and whatnot for sage grouse. And
that must be Clint.
Yeah, you know Clint.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so anyway, we just didn't see as many bears that we saw on, say, my hunt. So the only thing that we could really think of, we started to wonder, do they winter kill? And I also have another buddy in Montana who studies bears pretty and works for the Forest Service. And we're like, he was seeing some of the same things. He was like, I'm not seeing any bears. You know, kind of what he gathers, he thought maybe they winter killed too. But, I mean, I've never heard of that. It makes sense if they went into the dens with less fat. I don't know, is it possible that they could freeze to death without enough fat?
I wouldn't say freeze to death. Like I say, we've never seen any evidence of it. So
it's hard to assume there is if there's no evidence of it, right?
Yeah. What I would say is it would probably be more likely in new cubs or yearlings as opposed to adults. And especially if, you know, that female was right on the verge of where her body condition was, maybe not what it should be to give birth, or, you know, she was just barely on that peak there. And she did give birth, but she didn't have enough to sustain that cub throughout the winter from nursing and stuff. Gotcha. I would say that is more likely than an adult dying. But
yeah. Okay. So what other things would you suggest why folks were potentially seeing less bears? Like, what other guesses might you have?
Sometimes, you know, in the spring, last spring, we saw the same thing down here where people just weren't seeing the bears, but it's because they were in the dens longer. They weren't out moving yet.
Gotcha. Or that maybe different food sources or
factors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, I don't know if you've seen this, but we've seen that when they first come out of their dens, they stick kind of closer to the dens and don't travel a lot initially. Yes. And maybe that was a circumstance.
Yeah, it could have been. Like you guys know, hunting Idaho and that in the spring, you're following the green wave, right? When those grasses are greening up, and where that snow, there was so much snow that year. A lot of that was still under snow, so they just weren't in that area yet.
Yeah, and this one area that we'd seen a lot of bears the year prior had a lot of snow still. So we kind of assumed that maybe half the bears in kind of those draws maybe were still hibernating while some of them were out, some that den lower. I mean, we don't know this, right? We're guessing, totally guessing.
Sure.
And we're like, well, maybe some of the higher ones that were there still, you know, 3 feet of snow, they could still be, you know, denned up.
Yeah. Yeah. It could very well be.
Gotcha. So what else you learned from the denning studies?
So we also look at, we can look at the sex ratios of those new cubs from that year. And then that can kind of give us a glimpse on, you know, what is going to be available in the next year or 5 years or whatever for the sex ratios on there. If there's more boars that year or not. And typically the sex ratio is 50-50 for males, females.
Okay.
If it, on some studies, you know, if it ever pulls one way or another, it's usually heavier on the male end of that, just slightly.
Gotcha. You know, the DWR issues a bear, what do they call it before you can apply? It's like a bear orientation course.
Orientation club. Yeah.
Yeah. And you kind of have to go through this course where you have to try to distinguish whether something's a boar or sow. Tell me a little bit about the division stance on boar versus sow, or maybe even your own personal stance. Why a sow versus a boar? And tell me a little bit about the purpose for that.
Yeah, so it's kind of the same thing with a lot of wildlife species. We want to harvest the male segment of that population. The female segment of the population is what controls production, pretty much. So the sows are the ones having the cubs, right? You need one male will be able to mate with several females. And so they're the ones that are really, really popping out the cubs and causing an increase in the population. So if we want to raise our population, we want to lay off on sow harvest. We'd want to focus more on that male harvest.
Yeah. And how do you personally feel like the population's doing? Obviously you can speak better to, you know, your neck of the woods there, but sure. Like growing up in Northern Utah, you didn't really see bears. In fact, I remember my grandpa, I do a video on this with top 11 bear tips. It's on YouTube. And we didn't even know bears existed as kids. Like, we never saw them. You didn't hear about them. I mean, what? And then, you know, obviously there's more bears, I feel like, central Utah and then southern Utah. Tell me a little bit about bear populations. How healthy really are our bear populations? Do you think that, you know, the way that we have these units segmented where you can draw a limit entry, if you're lucky, every 5 to 12 years on some of these good units, like, or do you think that there's more bears that we could sustain, like a spot and stock hunt? Now, I know there's certain spot and stock hunts in the state, but like, sure. Talk to me about all that.
Yes. And that's exactly right. So since 2006 is really when we've kind of seen that population, like, it looked like it was going up. We were growing bears. 2014 through probably 2020, we were, especially that 2014 through 18, we were really growing bears, it looked like, at that time. Since then, you know, we have adjusted our management regimes. We've done a lot of these over the counter permits now, the spot and stock tags, mm-hmm. Which increases opportunity for hunters immensely. But it also doesn't really give us that much more harvest than we were getting in the past, just because of how hard they are to spot and stock.
Yeah, it's tough. And
it is.
It really takes a seasoned hunter to know what they're doing to be able to spot and stock bear hunter. I mean, us Utahns, we didn't grow up spot and stock bear hunting.
Exactly. Like, we're learning.
Yeah, exactly. Like the Idaho guys or the Montana guys. And I feel like even the Wyoming guys are kind of learning a little bit, but they can bait, you know, every year. But yeah, I feel like for a guy just to go out and be like, oh, I got a spot and stock bear tag, I'm going to go kill a bear. That's pretty tough to do if you've never done it before.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And I would say just, you know, in the last few years, since we've implemented some of those increases in permits, one way or another, we have seen where that population is probably starting to stabilize now.
Yeah. What's the success rate on that spot and stock hunt here in Utah?
It's different on different units. Statewide, I'm not sure, but down in this part of the country, it was like 7%.
Yeah. So not real high.
So no, not real high. So yeah, there is. And that's a great thing to be able to offer that opportunity for sportsmen to get out and have the chance to harvest a bear without really hurting our populations.
Yeah, definitely. And you don't hear a lot of sportsmen out there utilizing that opportunity. I feel like it's so new. I mean, how long has it been out? 5-6 years, maybe?
So the biggest one that we had, it's just a couple of years now. This might be the third year of it.
Okay.
We had a few that you had to draw out that were spot and stock, and that's been going on for a while. But
gotcha. Okay. Now, what else in pertinence to bear denning have you learned?
Yeah, so some of the other interesting things that we look at that is we can also look at den emergence, right? Mm-hmm. So when the bears are coming out, and that really affected on when we, like for the spring hunt, when we would have that open up, because we found that the boars are coming out before the females. And if that's the segment that we want to focus on or harvest on, we'd want to be able to have a better focus on those boars coming out earlier than when the sows come out of their dams.
So what would you do? Have an earlier season in that case?
Well, that's why we open it earlier. That way, thinking that people will focus in earlier and be able to harvest those boars first before the females start popping out.
Yeah. What would you say the percentage of boar to sow ratio is for harvest? Do you know some of those numbers?
So kind of an average over the last few years, it looks like somewhere around 100. And so for the last, since 1990, anyway, if I look at the total average, mm-hmm. we've killed 154 males and 81 would kind of be the ratio.
Oh, so that's good. I mean, that's good that there's more boars than sows at least.
Yeah, And that's what we typically see is higher on the males.
Gotcha. Now, do we have any idea what our populations are here in Utah versus, say, Idaho, bear-wise?
Idaho, I'm not sure. I'm not up on what their population is. Gotcha. We're currently probably somewhere around 2,000 adult bears.
Gosh, that's really not that many.
It really doesn't sound like that many, does it?
It doesn't. Yeah. No.
But when they start having, you know, so typically they have twins when they have cubs, twins, triplets sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that's really what bolsters the population, is that they can have that addition in those numbers when it comes. So
how tough are bears truly on ungulates in the spring, namely fawns and calves, elk calves?
Yeah, that's a good question, and we get hit with that a lot.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because you see all these YouTube videos and Instagram videos, these, you know, adult bears you know, hammering these, you know, fawns and cows and whatnot. So I'm like, does it take a learned trait where their parents taught these bears how to scoop up these, you know, fawns and calves, or is it something that every bear knows how to do? Or, you know, I don't know. I want to get your take on that.
Yeah, I think a bear will eat whatever is, you know, opportunistic for them. I'm sure mom takes them out and they've seen that and learned that from them as well. But if you put an ice cream cone in front of a kid, you know, they're going to eat it. It's going to be the same thing with them. What I would say is that, and I might have to maybe talk to you next year, we're actually doing a neonate study down here on the LaSalle's in San Juan that just started last year, where we're specifically looking at what's killing them, those new fawns. And so we've got some preliminary data, but it'd be good to get this next year done and see what's really going on there.
Yeah. What's your take on it? I know you don't have the data, but what's your take?
They'll kill them, of course. Usually it's, you know, kind of that 2 week period when the fawns and calves are just new on the ground and not really that mobile. After that period, those things are so fast. They can get away from the bears pretty easy, but it's not looking like it's a huge factor from what we've seen so far on this study. There was a study done back in the late 70s, early 80s on the LaSalle's, and they looked at bear scat and kind of analyzed what was the components of those scats. And they did find that it was like 850 scats that they looked at, but only 2% of those scats had any sign of deer predation in them.
Oh, okay. So that's not real high. Yeah. Now you mentioned bear emergence. What about, I don't know the term you use for it, but when they start to den up, what kind of data do you have on that?
When they go into the den?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's interesting too. So we have the GPS collars and we get locations off of these animals like every 2 hours. Well, that's what we do on deer. It's a little bit longer for deer or for bears. But we can see, when they start to form a cluster and they're just spending all their time in one area. And so we know, that's where their den's going to be. And that's how we go into these locations. But typically it's, you know, in November, it could be late October and then
really
into
early
November. Yeah.
And even in some of the southern units.
And that's why in some of these spot stock hunts, when people aren't seeing them in October, you know, sometimes they're already where they're going to be denned if they're not in there already.
Gotcha. So on that note, does a bear pick the same den year after year? Does he occasionally go back to the same den, or is it totally random? Like, how does he find a den?
Yes. And that's way interesting too. Cause you kind of learn where these, I mean, after 10 years, after following the same bears, you know, you learn kind of the area they're going to be in. Mm-hmm. So typically from what I've seen anyway, on these bears, they'll be in the same drainage, you know, within a 5 mile range, something like that, maybe even 2 miles most of the time. One that was kind of interesting this year, she's a bear, she's done it to me twice now, where I looked at those locations, got the cluster, thought, okay, yeah, her den is definitely going to be there. Hiked into the location and found a den, and dens can be different. We can talk about that later, but she had excavated this den in the side of a hill. You could see her claw marks and everything, but she was not in that den. And I never had another location after that. And so just a few weeks ago, all of a sudden she popped up. So when they go into their dens, the GPS is covered, right? And we won't get locations from them until they start to come out in the spring.
Is that because they can't reach satellite, the GPS?
Right, exactly. Okay. Yes. And so just a few weeks ago, her signal popped back up. So we seen where she really was and when went in there and denned her. But yeah, she had switched den spots for some reason, who knows what, but she did that a couple years ago too.
That's interesting.
Kind of frustrating.
Yeah. I can imagine that'd be kind of frustrating if you're trying to track her. How old is she?
She's 12 years old.
Okay. What's your typical average bear in Utah?
Average age of a bear. Yeah. So of course, hunted population, you know, and females are going to be older than boars. Like our average age of a harvested boar is probably 5 years old statewide. Uh-huh. But bears can live up to 30 years old. We've had documented studies here in Utah on the booklets and that of 30 year olds. So probably your average is somewhere around 18 or something now.
That's an old bear.
On the female. Yeah, it is.
You imagine the type of deer and elk we could grow if they live past 10.
Right? No kidding.
So what makes them actually decide, hey, I'm denning up? They get sleepy? Do they feel like they got enough fat reserves? Like, what sort of scientific trigger happens?
Yeah, it's a fat reserve. You know, they're putting on this fast so that, like we talked about earlier, they can get through the winter because resources aren't there, whether it's mass crops like acorns or pine nuts or berries or grasses. You know, it's not there in the wintertime, their main diet staples. And so as soon as they put on enough fat, that's what triggers them to go into that den.
Gotcha. Now, what's that denning time? So you mentioned late October. When are they coming out here in your units?
About right now. They're just starting to show up right now.
This late, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. We've had some of them stay till, you know, the 1st of May. That's kind of late, but it's happened.
Is there a difference up north in when they emerge?
It's typically March, April.
So a little earlier.
Well, and ours is the same. Typically March, April. It can happen into May. I've seen it that way, but typically it's late March throughout April.
Gotcha. So one of the other things you probably, and I know you probably don't collar the cubs, or maybe you do. But what's
not the new cubs?
Not the new cubs. Okay. What's the survival rate on?
So about 50% is what cub survival is on new cubs.
Really? That's not great. Yeah,
that's not great. No.
What do you think is a cause of that?
Yes. Some of it's just, you know, it kind of depends too on how many she has. Maybe there's a runt that year. I've seen one that was just for some reason. I mean, they're like humans, you know, something will happen and some birth defects or something where they don't make it. I've heard of them. I've never seen it, but just getting rolled around on by mom, which,
really?
I don't think that happens too often, but.
But you know that happens in cattle. I mean, I don't see a reason why a hibernating mom wouldn't be like, "Oops," you know.
Right, and like we talked about too earlier, if that sow, if her body condition was just right on the edge, maybe there's not enough there in nutrition when she's nursing them to sustain.
What about cannibalization? I know dogs will do that. Certain breeds of dogs.
Yeah. I haven't seen that from the mothers anyway.
Okay, so they're a little better mothers than dogs, maybe.
Right.
what about like other predators? Is there golden eagles attacking, bald eagles, coyotes, lions? I mean, what else you think is killing them?
Yeah. And in different parts of the country, I mean, I've read different studies on this, and of course, wolves and grizzlies on black bears is probably the biggest predators, to black bear cubs. Here where we don't really have those different species. I did document coyotes going into a den once. And I don't know what happened inside the den, of course, just from trail cameras, pictures, but, coyotes had came out with the cubs.
Oh, wow. Mom wasn't there or was there or was sleeping.
I don't know what happened to mom.
That's insane.
Yeah, it was. That one's kind of a mystery. And that's the only time that I've heard of that. So
interesting. Do you know where that took place?
That was on the LaSalle's.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. All right, guys. Game Changers are back in stock. Be sure to check them out. They're going quick. We got Ranger Green, Wolf Gray, Coyote Brown, and Black and Tan. Now, holsters will be here in the next 3 to 4 weeks, so stay tuned for those. Reserve your Game Changer now. They're going to be hitting stores. Check out Smith & Edwards. They're going to have them. Black Ovis, Sportsman's Warehouse, and Badass Outdoor Gear, along with a few others, will trickle in. So, Pack Connect rifle covers, we got some of those available. We have some trifle glassing pads. If you're going out for spring bear or sheds, we have the Muley Freak Ultralight Carbon Fiber Trekking Poles. Check those out as well. And then lastly, MagView gear. I, in my opinion, the best digiscoping option out there. Use code MuleyFreak10 to get 10% off MagView. Appreciate you guys' support. This is a great way to get back to us and get yourself some great gear in the meantime. Appreciate it, guys. So I have a kind of a wild story. Me and a buddy were hunting brown bears up in Alaska, namely the Alaska Range. And the strategy there was, you know, there's still a lot of snow, probably 10 feet of snow around. And what you'd do is you'd fly a Super Cub, try to find tracks, find emerging dens, try to see if one is still hanging by the den. Cause a lot of times they'll come outside the den, sleep for a while, maybe go try to kill a moose, sleep on the moose for a while till he eats it. Or sometimes they'll just wander for miles and miles. So then you try to, if you get a good light, you can track them out. Well, obviously in Alaska, you have to, you know, you have to land, wait till the next day before you can pursue them. You know, we just couldn't find a mature bear. We'd find ones we could track out, and some of them went miles. Some of them went out of our hunt areas because outfitters in Alaska have allocated hunt areas. You can't just hunt everywhere. And, you know, we were kind of coming back one day. I think it was the second to last day, and we went over this bear, and I'm like, I told my buddy, I'm like, dude, there's what looks like a giant bear right there. So we flipped this Super Cub around. We came back, and when we're coming back around, we did this big loop. We could see where this bear, And he says a lot of times he'll follow their tracks, and he believes that they're following their nose to try to, you know, find whatever food source they can go or find or whatever they can dig up. And he'd mentioned earlier in the week that he saw these brown bears, like some of them hunt black bears, like it's just what they do. And so we followed this track and led up kind of this big ledge up on this mountain, and we circled back around. This bear went back in the den by the time we'd looped, came out, and it had what looked like a full-grown black bear. And not a giant, of course, but like a black bear in his mouth. And he just barely killed it, which led me to believe he just barely like did this loop and dug it out of its den while it was sleeping, killed it, had it in its mouth. And we circled over at the plane. And again, it was a giant bear, like trophy bear. We couldn't pursue it because it was just out of the hunt area. We flew over it, and this thing was running down below the airplane. And the bear, the black bear, was flopping like this in the brown bear's mouth. It was insane.
That's wild.
Just absolutely insane. So, you know, black bears, you know, they're carnivores, omnivores, I guess, but, you know, they get hammered by other predators too, all over.
Right.
Maybe not so much here,
yeah,
but.
That's a wild story. Yeah. Yeah. Glad we don't have brown bears here.
Yeah. I'm kind of glad, but you know, it would be, it would be cool to have grizzlies again.
Yeah. Well, old Ephraim, you probably know the story.
Oh yeah. I was telling my kids the other day, I want to take them up on a side-by-side ride and go see the grave.
That's right.
But I was talking to another biologist, just, I think he was in the UNS, and he said that that the Wyoming guys, Wyoming biologists will track those grizzlies, and those grizzlies a lot of time will come within 11 miles of state lines.
Oh, probably so.
On the high UNS, you know, border, which makes sense, but it's a lot of desert. So, you know, they seem to think that because, you know, there's that desert country, they don't quite make it over into the, you know.
That's the buffer, yeah.
Yeah, but you think a grizzly could do well in the cache. I don't know how much time you spent on the cache, but maybe even the high UN is like, I could see that thick country, a lot of deadfall. I could see a grizzly thriving in there.
Yeah, it's good country for them there, yeah.
Yeah.
They used to be there.
Yeah, they used to be there once upon a time until settlers came in, right?
Right.
When was old Ephraim? Do you know off the top of your head? Wasn't early 30s? Early 30s, or was it before that?
Probably so. It was probably 20s or 30s.
Yeah, interesting. Well, what else have you kind of learned from the denning stuff? Like anything else that we haven't kind of talked about?
Yeah. Yeah. One more thing that I think is actually pretty cool. So at these dens, we put, like I mentioned, trail cameras out in front of them so that we can see what's going on after we leave. And one thing that's been really cool to see is these new cubs when they come out. So let me back up a little bit. When a sow goes into her den, she'll actually bring, you know, leaves and different debris from trees that she'll rake off of the trees, bring them in and make a nest, just like a bird nest inside there, a great big nest. Hmm. And that's, you know, a lot more comfortable than that cold ground in there. And so we put these trail cameras up and we can see the new cubs coming out with their mom, and mom will pull all of the old nest out eventually when they come out. And then we've been able to see her doing the same thing again, making a second nest in there and kind of showing these new cubs what to do. So they're imprinting on what to do from their mom at that early age on what they need to do for the next year or 2 years later.
So she literally goes in and rips out the nest and builds another one just to kind of show them how to do it.
Yeah. Yep.
Huh. Even though she's not going to hibernate again.
Right. Yeah. She's done for that year, but yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's insane.
Yeah. And one more thing you mentioned, we kind of skipped over it, was if bears use the same den site year after year or not. And typically they don't, like I was saying, that you can see what kind of, oh, the canyon or whatever that they're going to be. And you kind of get used to that. But in all the years that I've been here anyway, and it just happened this year, that bear that left her den and went back to it, she was in the same den that she was in 3 years ago. So she had reutilized that one, but 90% of the time, yeah, they're in a totally different den.
Gotcha. But they will hit it up again.
Yeah. Yeah. And they'll use anything, you know, like you said, from just under a rock overhang, that's kind of big, wide open. You wouldn't think there would be much to protect them against the elements in there, into little tiny spaces where they've just dug into the side of a riverbank or something.
Gotcha.
And just enough room for them to kind of curl up into,
you seem like
I've never had one on my units. I've heard some units up on the cache and that, though, where they use the inside of trees too. And you hear about that in different states as well.
But yeah. In fact, there's a ranch owner that we done a little bit of work with, and actually out of state, Colorado, and he was kind of doing some trimming, thinning on his ground, and when they bring in the dozer, they kind of pile up all these trees into a clump, and then they set them on fire. And he come back in the winter to set them on fire, obviously to kind of manage the fire control a little bit. And he'd have bears screaming out of those wood piles that he'd kind of piled up there. I thought that was pretty, they'd light a fire and a bear would come running out of there.
Is that right? So I actually had a collared bear, and she then in those slash piles, right, where they harvested all the timber and just stack it up. And she would, I don't know, she did that for probably 6 or 7 years in different ones, different slash piles. But that kind of made it interesting too, to go into her dens, because you're having to crawl in there and, you know, maneuver between all these logs that are down in that slash pile and try to tranquilize her in there.
Yeah.
And she was a mean one sometimes. Oh. She'd try to come after you sometimes. So you'd have to make sure you had an out.
So I was actually going to ask you that, like, what's the percentage of ones that are docile versus aggressive when you're kind of managing and exploring in their dens? Like, how awake are they?
Yeah, so they're awake. So you hear the term hibernation, right? And you think they're just out asleep. They're actually not true hibernators. They go into what's called torpor. And so they reduce their heart rate and their respiratory rate slightly. But they're always still awake and functional, mm-hmm. during the hibernation time or during the denning time.
Can they move fast though? Could they, you know, tear your face off?
They can. I mean, most of them, so 99% of them are just pretty somber. They might even open an eye and look at you and put their head under their arm and that's it. That I've only had two that I can think of off the top of my head. This one in the slash piles where she would, I mean, she wouldn't come right at us, but she'd charge and let you know she wasn't happy. And then I had one a couple years ago that was in kind of it reminded me of a hobbit home, but a rock.
Uh-huh.
It just had this little cave in the front of it. And when I went in there, it was a big entrance to the cave, and she was wide awake on her rear end, sitting there looking at me. And so I darted her, and she came running right out at me. And I think she just wanted to get out. It wasn't at me. She just wanted to get out of there. But that rock that she was under, it was probably 40 feet high and just a sheer wall, you know. And she came out and she went straight up that thing and just scaled up that,
really?
Those ledges. That was pretty impressive. Yeah.
What? So how was there that much room in her den to kind of like get out of her way while she run past you? And how did you have enough room in her den to maneuver?
Instincts, man. You just got to jump.
It just doesn't, from the videos I've kind of seen that the DWR post, there's not a ton of room in their dens. I mean,
yeah, a lot are different, you know.
Can't be that comfy, can they?
Interesting. I'll have to send you a picture of it.
Okay, gotcha. That's interesting. So most are pretty docile then, for the most part.
Yeah. Like I said, 99% of them don't even really even know you're there.
So what was that term you used? The type of hibernation they do?
Torpor.
Torpor.
Yeah.
And what does that mean exactly? Just reduced heart rate and reduced.
Exactly. Yep.
Gotcha.
Just reduced vital rates pretty much. Yeah.
Gotcha. Now, do they urinate and defecate while they're?
No, that's another amazing thing about bears. I mean, they go sometimes, you know, 6 months into this den and they don't eat, they don't drink, they don't use a restroom. Yeah. They're unique.
That's why they die of colon cancer at 30 years old.
Right.
Oh, that's interesting. No need to urinate, defecate, eat. I wonder if they get hungry.
You know, they just metabolize that fat. That's why they're putting on that much fat. And it's like in the fall and that, they need, you know, it's around like 20,000 calories a day to put on just to get that requirement that they need.
Gotcha. Now, you kind of did a little video with Aaron where you had to, I believe you guys had to kill a bear, a problem bear. Tree.
Yeah, we didn't kill it.
You removed it.
Yeah, we translocated it. Yep.
Oh, how did it do after you translocated it?
That one, I don't think we didn't put a collar on that one.
Oh, okay. So you don't know. What,
right.
Like when is it three strikes you're out with bears?
Yeah. So usually for our policy, a male adult bear usually only gets not even a strike if they've done something that's typically, we have to go in and euthanize it.
Breaking into a cabin, is that one strike?
Yes, that could be, yeah. Gotcha. And a lot of times, if we have chronic problem bears, if it's a younger male or an older female without cubs, and we've moved them, two times and they've come back again, then that third strike.
Gotcha.
Probably their last, yeah.
Or
any time human safety is in jeopardy,
Yeah, sure. Which segues me to my next question. When was the last human mortality that we had here in Utah,
It was that young man, Samuel Ives, up in American Fork Canyon. And I can't remember the year that it was back in 2005. It was a while ago.
Yeah, it was.
Don't quote me on that. I don't know the
Was year. It Cub Scout camping or something? Or he's no, camping with family?
No, with his family.
Okay. Yeah. I do kind of remember that story, and it just ripped him out of his tent. Was no one else around? Do you know the story? Or
yeah, I won't get into all the details, but his parents were there in a tent next to him. But he did have some items in his tent, some particles of food and stuff that brought the scent there. Gotcha. To him.
Which that's super rare. I mean,
very unfortunate.
I mean, it's hard to bring a bear into your bait, let alone into your camp where you're at, so for the stars to align and for that tragedy to happen, that's just awful.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, it goes to show you the precautions that you do need to take, because it can happen. So yeah, be very bear aware when you're camping. Keep everything out of your tent that has any scent at all.
Would you say
even
the general
toothpaste?
Oh really? Toothpaste, huh?
Yeah.
Would you say the general population, like, maybe let's go even into non-hunters, would you say they have an inherent fear of black bears?
I think so. You hear that a lot, that people are scared of bears, mm-hmm. and you really don't need to be. Do your part and, like I say, take these precautions. They're usually more scared of you than you are of them, but that is, people typically tend to be scared of bears, cougars, predatory animals,
right? Because we're pretty casual with the way we hunt them in the spring. Like we're deep, and we got food all around us. We're not taking many precautions that way. And we're a bunch of guys in good shape that are younger, and we have weapons laying everywhere. And we don't carry bear spray, but we're on a mission to hunt them. We typically have our Walther pistols with us, 9mm. And obviously our rifles, but yeah, we're hoping a bear wants to break into the tent.
Right. Yeah.
But it's pretty rare,
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Anyways, anything else that you have on interesting things that you've learned while denning? I mean, what's the DWR? I'll let you think about that. And then also, what's the statewide objective for bears? Are we going to stay around that 2,000? Do we want to get to 5,000? I mean, what's kind of the goal?
Yeah. So the way that we manage bears, and we just redid our black bear management plan last year. And I was fortunate enough to be on that committee. So it was a great group of people on that committee. But the way that we manage them is we have three different categories. We've got a liberal, a moderate, and a conservative category that we issue tags, and it's based on what the percentage of the female kill is, or the female harvest that you want, and so that's kind of what we base our tags off. And if we're above, if we're harvesting more females than that category that we want to be in, then we should reduce tags, and then vice versa as well. So.
So there's not necessarily like a...
So we don't really have like a population objective like we would for deer or elk.
Gotcha. What, do you have any idea what the population was, say, in the 1950s?
Oh, I'd have to dig back and look at that. But I would say that the black bears in this state, anyway, they only became a protected species in 1967. And then in 69 is when we had our first tags for them. So
it's kind of, black bears are kind of a newer thing. No wonder our grandparents and parents said there's no bears.
Right. Right.
Yeah. We love black bears, probably not the same degree that you do. Obviously you study them and collar them and do all these studies with them and study data and whatnot. But like, we just, first off, we love going out in the spring. It's a wonderful time of year where the ungulates are chill. There's new animals on the ground. and the birds are happy. It's like everyone's just so relieved that the winter's over and you got this green grass sprouting up and these beautiful flowers and these big old mountains with fast streams with a little bit of snowfall on the tops of the mountains. Like it's just a wonderful time of year. And to be able to be on the mountains when everything's so chill. And you know what? Spring black bear has only, you know, gained popularity maybe the last 3-4 years in different states. But you know, chasing those things, I just have so much respect for them. I've kind of learned them. You know, I hadn't seen many bears, let's put it that way, before I actually went out and started trying to learn to hunt them. And I went many, many years without any luck harvesting one. But you kind of, the more you hunt them, especially in the spring, you learn their behaviors. You know, there's like a 2-3 week window where you're going to have a higher success rate, where they're targeting the yellow flowers, where they're, you know, more out on green grassy hillsides feeding. And it's not just any green grass. They like want a certain level of green, I've noticed too, when I'm out there hunting. And it's just fun. It's just so much fun getting out, stretching your legs, looking for sheds and, you know, trying to hunt these black bears. And, you know, I've learned too that, you know, just killing a bear is, you know, you can just kill a bear. Now, if it's for your first time, I'm all about, you know, getting your first black bear under your belt and experiencing that and harvesting the meat and the hide and everything else. But like hunting a big bear, spot and stalk. Now that's hard.
That's tough.
It's tough because he's lived many, many years. Like you said, 12, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, and some lived to 30. I don't know if you watched that video that we did where I shot that old ancient sow. In fact, that sow was so big. Yeah. I thought it was a boar, and it was like, there was like no teeth in that bear.
Yeah.
and
crazy.
Probably well past her child or, you know, her cub bearing days. And that was just a pretty neat experience for me. And what a cool animal to be able to live that long. I mean, there's not an animal here in the U.S. that I know of that lives that long. I mean, cats don't live that long, right?
Right. No.
Deer, elk, six.
More like, no, it's like domestic animals, like a horse pretty much. But yeah. As far as wild animals, we get some elk that get some age on them, you know, they'll get into their high 20s.
Oh, really? You get some cows that old, huh?
Yeah.
I bet they taste well.
Right.
Well, I appreciate you joining us. We've almost been 50 minutes here. It's been a real treat, you know, learning more about bears and kind of your studies and denning. Is there any, back to that question, is there anything else that you've kind of thought interesting that you've kind of learned with those studies?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to me. It's kind of humorous, but I'll tell you about another denning effort that we had. It was interesting. So like I said, we put these trail cameras up, and we put them up, and we used to put them up without bear boxes on them, right? We were learning then, and so we just put them up in a tree or whatever was close to that den entrance. And we had this den, and it was a long den. It was probably 20 feet back in, and then it just made this 90 degree angle and went another 8 feet or so that way. And that's where she denned. So she was in there and it was tight. And we actually had to use mirrors when we got to the end of that and put them around the angle to see, you know, what position she was in
what
she was doing, so we could tranquilize her. Was in there. So, yes. And so long story short, we got her tranquilized, put the trail camera out there without any bear boxes. She came out, of course, and seen something new there, because they'll poke their eyes out and just sit and look in front of the den for a while. But she eventually got that camera down off the tree and just tore it apart. And I went in there later in May or whatever to go retrieve it so we could see what was on that camera. And all I found was the casing of the camera. I couldn't find the SD card, couldn't find the batteries. She had taken those batteries, and you know how hard they are to get out.
Oh, yeah.
With us. You have to get your knife or whatever and pry them out. She'd got those out, and the SD card is gone. They had that little detent segment that you have to push them in to pull them out.
Right.
And it was gone. And so I sat there for a while and looked for it. And I know this has happened to a couple of other biologists too, so it's kind of funny. But looked around, couldn't find anything. And then, you know, we mentioned they don't use the restroom in the dens, but when they come out, they have what we call a plug. So
rather, yeah, the fecal plug. We actually didn't get to that, but yeah.
Yeah, so they'll get rid of that. And so I'm looking around and I found that and got going through it. And sure enough, there's the SD card.
No. Yeah. You pulled the SD card out of the bear's cat.
Yep. And so, and like I say, that's happened to other biologists too that I've talked to. So it's, that's kind of interesting.
Okay. Now let me ask you this. Did it register any pictures?
That one did not.
You should have taken it to forensics. See if they can pull anything off it. Oh man, that's an awesome story. Now that was on my notes to talk to you about that plug. Like, how long does it take them to kick that plug out once they emerge?
It's pretty much instantly when they come out that first time they're getting ready.
I didn't know if they had to like eat grass for a certain amount of time or
no.
And they probably unload, huh?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, some are more than others, but yeah.
Yeah, that had to
you'll know where you find it.
Yeah, that had to been fun digging through that.
Yeah.
Did you find batteries in that or just the SD card?
No, I did find the batteries scattered down the hill later. But
they're kind of curious critters, don't you think?
They are very curious, yeah. Yeah. Another one we had like that, real quick, I'll tell you about. We had to actually go out on this. It was probably maybe 16-inch ledge for, I don't know, 10, 12 feet that we had to kind of shimmy across to get to her den. So they'll go into some crazy places. And then again, we couldn't find anything, of course, to put a trail camera on because there was nothing there. It's just the edge of the wall there, the ledges. And so we actually went up above and took some downfall that we'd found, some logs, and took some rope and kind of hung it out there in front of the den off the space, you know, and she had, I think they were new cubs. It would have had to have been that year. And you'd see them come out and kind of crawl out there as far as they could. And then pretty soon you'd just see the trail camera. All the pictures were just dangling back and forth. So they'd got clear out there and messed with that one too.
Oh, that's fun. They're curious too. And they like to play a lot. Curious. They love to play. Yeah. They're fun to watch. Well, man, Dustin, you've been a wealth of knowledge. Appreciate all your work you do for the Utah DWR, all you do for bears and bear studies. And thanks for taking time out of your day to join us on this podcast.
All right. Yeah, you betcha.
Yeah. Well, guys, thanks for listening. As you know, we can't grow unless you share the show. So please give it a like, leave us a review, subscribe, and share the show wherever you're watching it, social media. Appreciate you guys. And we'll catch you on the next one.